50 years ago this week, the Edmund Fitzgerald sank in Lake Superior during a violent storm. All 29 crew members perished. A new book says the Fitzgerald was the U.S. economy and symbolized the slow collapse of American manufacturing and putting corporate profits first. The sailors who transported the ore fueled a surging manufacturing base in which millions of households depended on for their livelihoods. But the hardworking sailors and the families they left behind paid the ultimate price. Thomas Nelson is author of Wrecked, The Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. He has served in elective office for 20 years and is Outagamie County executive. Tom, welcome.
Great to be on. Looking forward to it.
You argue there were economic storms that were brewing around the mighty Fitz. Why isn't the gales of November the full picture of this tragedy?
What I wanted to do is I wanted to approach the book differently, much differently. I wanted to put the Edmund Fitzgerald in a larger historical context to understand why is the Edmund Fitzgerald so important to American history. And so while other authors were asking one set of questions geared toward shipwrecks, my book, my project, was geared toward an entirely different set of questions. And as you would expect, I got a lot different set of much different answers. And so it allowed me to lay out this thesis and talk about why the Edmund Fitzgerald was a vehicle that literally and figuratively carried the U.S. economy in the 1960s, in the 1970s. And by asking those questions and getting answers to those questions, I was also able to paint a very clear picture on the underlying cause of why the ship sank.
It's interesting that the ship had these chronic maintenance problems by the early 70s, and her crew was just going nonstop, making an average of 44 round trips each season. Why was the Fitzgerald rarely floating in port in Milwaukee?
Well, the reason why it has, you know, the city of Milwaukee underneath Edmund Fitzgerald is that the Edmund Fitzgerald was built and owned by Northwestern Mutual, but it was operated by Ogilvie Norton. But I'm glad that you brought that up, because one of the big differences between the Fitzgerald and the three other ore ships that were on the lake that night is that the other three ore ships, the Ford, the Anderson, and the Sykes, they were owner-operated. In other words, they were owned by the company that they were hauling taconite ore for. That was not the case with the Fitzgerald. So it was owned by one entity and then operated by a different entity. In other words, the Edmund Fitzgerald was a rental and was treated as such.
When you say treated as such, can you talk about the upkeep issues and just the business values that were bestowed on this ship?
Well, the long and the short is that it was not kept up. And there was a deposition that was conducted in 1977, and inexplicably, it hasn't really been reported on. And in this deposition, the 30th crew member of the Fitzgerald that season, a guy by the name of Red Bergner, so he sailed that season but was off for the month of October and part of November, and someone took his place. So Red Bergner knew the Edmund Fitzgerald inside and out because he was on it for 10 years and he kept ship over the winter. He did a deposition before one of the attorneys representing two families, and he basically spilled the beans. He made it very clear that it was in very bad shape. It was not being maintained. And in fact, it was in such bad shape, the keel was falling apart. And over the years, they had tack welded pieces of steel to literally patch it up. So the keel was in awful condition. Red Bergner actually brought down to the hold the executive vice president of Ogilvie Norton and showed him, look, this thing is falling apart. You should do something about it. But they didn't. At the same time, the relationship with the regulators, specifically the American Bureau of Shipping and the Coast Guard, was a cozy relationship. They were not honest and upfront about what kind of condition the ship was in, and or they simply did not require these changes immediately. So those were two, I think, obvious factors. And then when you add into the mix exactly how this business model for the Fitzgerald was much different than other ships, you can see how there wasn't much of an incentive to keep it in shape. And there were times, and the Fitzgerald was known, respected for hauling and breaking records time. And again, as the Gordon Lightfoot song says, that she was 26,000 tons more than she lay empty. So the capacity was 26,000 tons. However, the records that she was breaking in the late 60s, the early 70s, were 30,000 tons, 31,000 tons. And as you said at the beginning, if the Fitzgerald is making 44 round trips, and this is happening over 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, I mean, you're talking between 150 and 200 round trips where the ship is 20% above capacity. And there were also design problems too.
We're talking about a new book that connects America's manufacturing decline to the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald 50 years ago this week. Tom Nelson is the author of Wrecked. Only a handful of first-generation Fitzgerald family members are alive, and you knocked on some doors. You spoke face-to-face with some family members. What did you want to find out?
Well, as you know, being a current elected official, former legislator, I've knocked on a lot of doors, and this is kind of second nature. So I knocked on a few doors, including a guy by the name of Fred Armagost outside of Iron River, Wisconsin. And to get a hold of him, since he didn't have a cell phone, I don't think he had a landline either, you had to knock on his door. And so knocked on his door, asked him, introduced myself, asked him if he had time to talk about his brother and the Fitzgerald. He was the younger brother of Michael Armagost, who was the third mate, pretty important figure in all this. And he said, sure. And so we sat down, and first of all, you know, I apologize. I'm sure people call you all the time, or at least come up to your door and interview about this. And this is 48 years after the sinking. I did it 2 years ago. And he told me that I was the first person to ever interview him. And that's amazing, because these families have lived hard lives, and they have lived with this dark cloud over them. How did their loved one pass away? Was it their fault? Because a prevailing theory at the beginning, 40 years ago, was the theory about the hatches that were not sealed properly. And again, Gordon Lightfoot memorialized that in his song. Subsequent investigations and so forth suggested that even if that were the case, that wasn't the reason why it went down. And my book in particular makes it very clear that of all the people associated with the Fitzgerald, entities and individuals, the last group that should carry any blame were the crew members.
And for the family's lawyers, their key evidence sits at the bottom of the lake. Mm-hmm. How big of an issue was that for their legal case and their compensation?
That's a good question, because it cut both ways. So 1975, there's very little means and technology to be able to go 500 feet below to the lake bed of Superior. And so there was kind of like this game between the company and the attorneys of brinkmanship, where whenever they had technology to get down there, it could go either way. It could be clear that it was a matter of unseaworthiness, or it could be negligence or some sort of actions on the behavior of the captain or the crew members. So they wanted to get rid of it. They wanted to get out of the news. They wanted to move on. But the family's attorneys were correct in trying to push for real compensation. The initial offering from Ogilvie Norton was $35,000 per family. And that number bears out, because their deductible, according to one attorney, was $1 million. Well, you take 35,000 times 29 crew member families, and it's about $1 million. So it seems as though Ogilvie Norton had a $1 million deductible, and they're like, okay, we're out $1 million, but we're not going to spend a penny more than that. And so the families that were represented, in particular, Toby Markovich of Superior, he was able to secure for Janice Armagost a six-figure settlement, which was substantially higher than the rest of the families. And Janice was very involved, remains involved with the families in remembering the Fitzgerald. And I don't know specifically what kind of interaction she has with other family members, but I can say that the differences in settlements and payouts between the families was a point of tension among them.
As we wrap up here, I want to circle back to manufacturing, and you predict that demands for a strong shipping economy will only continue to grow. How could Wisconsin be poised and ready to meet this demand?
Wisconsin could be at the center. We have Bay Ship in Sturgeon Bay. We have Fincantieri Marina up in Marinette. So those are two businesses that are very involved, that do maintenance, that do construction. Marinette Marine, they construct ships for the Navy. Bay Ship does repairs on iron ore ships. And in fact, if you go up there every once in a while, the Arthur Anderson, who was on the lake with the Fitzgerald, comes into port. I mean, that ship's alive and well. We can circle back to my comments about this earlier. But what happened is, you know, we can be at the center because once upon a time, this was a really big part of our economy. And I think if we finally have a mandate, if we have an incentive from the federal government that says, look, we need to invest in shipping because if it's not part of our national security, as in the case for the Navy, then it's definitely part of our economic security. We have the infrastructure, we have the means, we have the manpower. We can absolutely do this.
Tom, thank you for joining us.
Good to be on.
Tom Nelson's new book is called Wrecked, The Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. He took on this book project with editing assistance from Lawrence University history professor Gerald Poder.